many, many nawafil prayers, many mustahab prayers, which inshallah we will discuss in the following episodes.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun La ilaha illahum Ghaffarun Jameelun Wahhabun Latifun Tawwabun Samiun Basir
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajum. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at the supplications of Al-Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salamullah, found in the book As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyya, supplication number 8, verse number 1, vice number 2, anger, Al-Ghadab. In previous episode, we said in the words of the mystic, the teacher of morals, Al-Imam Al-Khumayni radhiyallahu alayhi, he said that anger itself stems from two branches. One, as he called, hubbuddat, love for oneself. When we talk about love for oneself, it's very easy to see how anger comes about. Because when I feel there is competition on the outside when it comes to my own needs and wants and desires and pleasures, this state of anger takes over me naturally and by itself, and then I have no control over it. It just automatically takes over. And why? Because I have a greed. I want to have more of everything because I love myself. I want to have more money. If I see someone else doing something that, you know, is against me, or at least trying to get more than me,
automatically I start to get nervous, start to get angry, and takes over me. And then it would lead that hubbud that itself, love for oneself, or being egoistic, having the ego, usually will lead to every other sin. But a person who doesn't, obviously does not have that problem. Let us take a break, then we continue right after, inshallah.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. When a person is calm and collected, and he does not have too much attachments to materialistic matter. He's not attached to wealth. He's not attached to fame. He's not attached to position. He doesn't have attachment to things that might, you know, chain him to this world. He's more free. His soul is content. His mind is content. He has calmness inside him because he doesn't have the love for these things. So every step he takes is a good step. He moves based on the fact that he has logic and he has justice, and he goes against his desires and his pleasures because he has no attachments, meaning he does not love these things. Because sometimes if we look at ourselves, we find ourselves, we say love too much. I love this house, I love this car, I love this person, I love this pen, I love this phone, I love, love, love. How many things are we attached to without realizing? Now, this all relates to the love of oneself. Because when I say I love this, obviously I don't love the phone for itself when I say I love this phone. I love the pleasure the phone gives me. When I say I love this car, obviously, I don't love the metal of it, but I love the pleasure, the pride it gives me for being inside it. So love for not it, but love for oneself, love for myself. And this is what we call fish love. You don't love the fish for itself, because fish is not something that to be loved, but you love the pleasure that the fish gives you, which is satisfaction, right? So how about that is a cause for anger and every single thing in between. We need to be very careful. Then the Imam, he says, the second thing that causes people and a person to be angry is in fact ignorance itself and confusing perfection and where it lies. Sometimes a person, due to his lack of knowledge, due to his increasingly amount of ignorance, he becomes angry and he does all the bad things that he thinks he's doing for the right cause. He gets angry and he thinks he's getting angry for the right cause when he is not. Let us take a break, then we continue right after.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So Imam Khomeini says, the second root and cause for anger is in fact ignorance. Now, because a person is ignorant, he sees that anger is a good thing. How so? He thinks when he's angry, he's being brave. he's not a coward anymore. You know, I can yell my voice out, I can shout, I can yell, I can stand out. And he thinks that's a form of bravery. In fact, that's nowhere near bravery. Bravery is controlling your anger, putting it in the right place. So due to ignorance, a person misses the concept. So he wants to be brave, which is a kamal, which is a perfection. But in fact, what he's doing is not perfection anymore. And he has this audacity to do things. And he shows himself up. And he stands and he says, I am, me. And he, you know, tries to do all these things. Where he thinks he's trying to be perfect. He's being perfect. But in fact, he's not. He's undermining himself. He's destroying himself. So his ignorance is what leads him to be angry in the first place. And he thinks what is a vice is a moral act. And he does not differentiate between, as we say, bravery and cowardice. He does not differentiate. Or going extreme and becoming a person that has no control over himself and no logic. And as we said, bravery is a sign of a mu'min. A bravery is one of the traits of the mu'mineen. It's one of their good traits to be brave. And bravery obviously has an anger to it. However, a mu'min is in control of such an anger. He puts it in the right place. It turns out to be bravery. Where an ignorant person, which is not a mu'min, because all the mu'mineen are smart, are ulul albab, those who have intellect. Those who are not mu'mineen are ignorant, and as we say in our technical word, stupid in the sense of the word. They just don't know what to do. They can't do the right thing. Therefore, they put themselves in the mess of anger to begin with. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
A few hooks and a shelf have transformed a wall in the Swedish capital, Stockholm, into an outdoor charity. It's called the Wall of Kindness, which is painted with the slogan, grab a jacket if you need one, leave a jacket if you can spare one. Here people can donate their winter clothes or warm boots if they have some extra. The Wall of Kindness is meant to help those in need, including the homeless, to stay warm. The wall was set up by a real estate company, and the organizer says people have responded positively with the high turnover. The move was inspired by a trend that has been seen in Iran over the years. Several other countries across the world, such as India, have also organized similar outdoor charities.
Scientists in Brazil have come up with a creative way to shore up the population of a majestic species of monkeys in danger of extinction. Brazilian conservationists have constructed a bridge to reconnect the two sides of Rio de Janeiro's Atlantic forest. The road had effectively isolated a group of lion tamarins, but now it offers hope for the endangered monkey. There are only 2,500 golden tamarins left in the wild, all of them in Brazil. It is estimated that these animals have lost more than 95% of their habitat.
As people around the globe are preparing for the New Year holidays, the Vatican lights up a Christmas tree and nativity scene set up on St. Peter's Square. People gathered around the square waiting for long hours to see the illumination. Even heavy rain did not stop them. That's why the official lighting ceremony was held inside the Paul VI Hall, where Pope Francis presides his weekly audiences. The nativity scene, made of more than 30 pieces, is created by Peruvian artists. The majestic Christmas tree is about 28 meters and comes from Andalo, northern Italy. The locals see the stunning tree as a symbol of hope and peace. The tree will be switched on every night until January the 6th.
Childhood joy and lightness meet with art at a first-of-its-kind museum in Rome, Italy. Here, all kinds of art decorations are made of balloons. The exhibit dubbed Let's Fly displays a broad range of interactive artworks. In one installation, visitors are invited to find their inner child by diving into a pool of hundreds of small balloons. In another section, giant inflatable sculptures double as a playground for kids. Some installations move only by riding a bicycle. The museum is a place where artists and spectators coexist for a journey into a world of inflatable art capable of freeing the imagination of all ages.
It's the combination of art with childhood and adolescence that makes this place so magical. So they are art installations, but also games. The blurred line between the two is what makes the museum so unique.
The balloon exhibit incorporates innovative works created by 14 different artists from across Europe. The artifacts were created using hundreds of thousands of biodegradable balloons. Organizers say they want to increase environmental awareness by being eco-friendly, as all the artworks will be reused or recycled. The exhibit will run until March the 5th.
Chinese students receive a science lesson on their country's space station, and they are lucky enough to receive it firsthand from the astronauts living in the first and core module of the station. The class was held via a live broadcast shown on the state television. The three astronauts gave a lecture that focused on physics. They explained how the weightlessness environment affects the movement of objects. The astronauts also gave a tour of the station they arrived at in October for a six-month stay. It seems that their teachings were quite motivating. The students peppered their instructors with questions, including those about living conditions in space. China launched its space station in April and plans to complete it by the end of the next year. Christmas is just around the corner, and children are waiting for their presents. In Guatemala, Santa Claus has a new mode of transport to give gifts to children with cancer.
Today, as in the past year, we are celebrating Christmas with the cancer patients at the shelter. Santa Claus came in a helicopter to give presents to the children. It is very emotional for the children. The majority of them have never been so close to a helicopter, let alone Santa Claus.
That was an exciting experience for the children. The charity event was organized by an institute that supports cancer patients for remote areas in Guatemala. The institute says the event aimed to help the children go through their therapies with more ease. The Amazon River turtles are in danger of extinction, but environmentalists have come up with an initiative to save their lives, and that's by protecting their eggs. Climate change and human activities against their ecosystem have been putting these creatures at risk. Now, what the biologists and local volunteers do is that
they recover the turtle nests from riverbanks during the rainy season to protect them from drowning. Then they take care of the baby turtles until they develop a hard shell and are ready to start their life journey. Batches of tiny turtles release into a river in the Amazon border between Bolivia and Brazil. They are now grown enough to protect themselves against different threats. Environmentalists have been doing this for more than 20 years, saving millions of baby turtles. This time they released 1 million of the little turtles. During the Christmas season, people around the world love to add a dose of joy in the form of Santas. Children especially feel ecstatic to see Santas distributing presents and snacks. But you'll be amazed to see how one Santa this time dives into water to give well-behaved sharks and fishes their goodies. In Malta's National Aquarium, Scuba Claus, helped by an elf, plunges into a huge fish tank with his sack of treats to feed sharks and fishes. Santas, ho ho ho, come out in bubble through his snorkel over his white beard. The aquarium, located in the northern part of the island, hosts more than 175 different species of various marine animals.
Butterflies are probably the most popular among all insect species on Earth due to their beauty and color. Millions of monarch butterflies have flocked to a Mexican forest, creating a magical sight, drawing tourists, scientists, and locals there. The monarch butterflies flee the cold winters of Canada and northern United States and travel thousands of kilometers to hibernate and reproduce in the temperate woods of central Mexico. Hundreds of trees crowded with butterflies can be seen along Mexico's 13,000-hectare monarch reserve after their long journey. However, experts warn of a drop in the number of the species. Climate change is reported to have had an impact on their butterflies' migration pattern, as well as a reduction in their milkweed breeding habitat in the United States.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
With the Christmas season in full swing, hundreds have gathered on Spain's Gran Canaria island to watch stunning sand sculptures representing the birth of Christ. 8 sand artists from around the world have created these spectacular figures. It took them a week to complete the scenes. A huge sand wall is built around the sculptures to protect them. The island has been holding the event every year since 2006. The warm temperatures on the Spanish beach have helped attract a lot of visitors over Christmas. According to the organizers, at least 200,000 people have visited the exhibition in the past 15 years. A joyful day at an Australian zoo as a baby pygmy hippo is born. That's good news for the zoo staff because pygmy hippos are endangered species. Cambiri, the mother hippo, gave birth to the calf last month. It's her second calf, and the first one was born in a Sydney zoo 4 years ago. The newborn is yet to be named. It sticks to the mum and follows her wherever she goes. The calf is spending most of its time out of the sight of the public, as for now it's learning to walk and swim. And the mum keeps a close eye on the calf at all times.
The first few days, she did not leave the calf's side, was very sedate, very quiet, and just looking after its every need. And only in the last sort of couple of days, as she started to get a little bit more sleep in,
They are regarded as endangered animals because of illegal hunting and loss of habitat. Currently, less than 3,000 pygmy hippos are living in the wild.
Is it interesting to experience what Harry Potter went through at Hogwarts? Well, it could be, at least for students at a university in Pakistan kicking off a festival celebrating the fictional wizard. The students at Government College University made their 150-year-old campus look like the magical school created by British author J.K. Rowling. They put on costumes and set up decorations reminiscent of Hogwarts. The university's vice chancellor says the campus, with its vast halls and soaring archways, has always reminded the students of the fictional school.
Most of these youngsters, they grew up at the time when J.K. Rowling's work was being presented in the novels and then later on in the film. So that magical charm, that fantasy, they really enjoyed. They grew up reading that fantasy. And then when they come to Government College University and see these architecture, it reminds me of that Hogwarts that is being filmed in Harry Potter films.
The university official spoke proudly of what his students have done. They were themselves happy too, calling their experience fun. Others said it was unbelievable to be in Hogwarts. The festival also screened Pakistan's first fan-made Harry Potter film made and acted by the students. The Swedish city of Stockholm has launched its 31st annual Christmas competition of baking gingerbread.
There is a limited in space, so it's 40 centimeters by 40 centimeters, and everything you build, all the material need to be eatable. So you can build with different things, gingerbread of course, but also candies and other things, but you need to be able to eat it. So that's one of the rules as well.
Each year, the Gingerbread House competition, hosted by ArcDesk Museum of Architecture and Design, has a theme for the designs. This year's theme is Together, attracting various interpretations of the topic. So far, the entries have included the Titanic, the famous coffee shop from the American TV show Friends, an igloo, and the Berlin Wall, all entirely edible. The event, which has been running for 31 years, is designed for all kinds of creators, such as children, young people, adults, amateurs, and professionals. The Tasty exhibition runs until January the 5th. A Palestinian teacher has developed an assistant for himself nicknamed Mr. Robot, bringing joy to the children of a school in Gaza. Mr. Robot teaches the children of Al-Basma School about electric circuits and helps them memorize their lessons. Mr. Robot moves freely in the classroom, speaking Arabic to students and communicating with them as a friend. The teacher creating it says the aim was to stimulate creativity and innovation in his classroom.
Mr. Robot, as his name suggests, is the teacher's assistant and not his replacement. He assists in the education process by asking questions and giving answers, greeting students and interacting with them in all aspects of a class.
The teacher says at first students reacted to it in a strange way, but later on they said it was like a dream come true for them. Local engineers say the robot is the first of its kind in the Gaza Strip, where electrical tools and components are scarce.
Nowadays, Hausavi students, everybody who enters in the Hausa, are benefiting from the students who were nurtured by Ayatollah Saadat Parvez.
Now he was participating and accompanying Allama Tabatabai Rahmatullah Alayhi more than 30 years. And here is the turning point in his life.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
What will we say in front of it?
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Very welcome to the program, The Teacher. The Teacher is about the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite scholars, philosophers, spiritual trainers, and jurists during the history of Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Zainia. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Zainia, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah to you and to your dear listeners.
Today we want to talk about an outstanding figure who has spent most of his life in nurturing the students regarding spirituality and akhlaq or ethics, one of the most outstanding students of Allama Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai. He is no one but the late Ayatollah Haj Sheikh Ali Saadat Parvar, mainly known as Pahlevani Tehrani. Okay, Sheikh Zainia, let's start with you, brother. Give us some details about the early life of the late Ayatollah Haj Sheikh Ali Saadat Parvar.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Late Ayatollah Sheikh Ali Saadat Parvar, also famous as Pahlevani Tehrani, rahmatullah alayh, was born in 1305 in solar calendar in the city of Tehran in Iran. And his birthday was coincident with the day of the birthday of Amirul Mu'minin alayhi salatu wasalam, Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Okay.
And he was born in a religious family. And because, you know, Tehran on those days was not a good city for, you know, studying for a religious family, studying in schools. So that's why he entered a special school that was held in a mosque and started having Islamic studies. That these schools were called maktab at those times.
Or schools, per se. That's
yeah.
Okay.
He learned the preliminary studies of Islamic, you know, seminary in Tehran, like, for example, Arabic literature and some books regarding fiqh and usul al-fiqh, but, you know, introductory ones like ma'alim and lum'ah. And he was very eager to have a travel to Atabat Aliyat, I mean, Najaf al-Ashraf and Karbala and Samarra and Kazimain. And he had this chance, you know, it was very hard in those times to have this, you know, ziyarat for normal people because the travel, you know, facilities was really hard. So, but he had this chance to have a caravan with some young men from Tehran, and they went to do ziyarat. And after that, he came to the Islamic seminary of Qom and started studying there. And here is the turning point in his life that he gets familiar with a very noble figure, a great one, no one but late Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayh, that has come to this city, to this, the city of Qom, to teach Islamic studies to good students.
That's all right. Really enjoying the presence of Allama Tabatabai had direct role, Sheikh Mahdavi, in shaping the very character of Ayatollah Saadat Parvar. Talk a little bit about this.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, this is really important if we get this chance and tawfiq to accompany somebody like Allama Tabatabai for more than 30 years. Some books have recorded that 40 years he was accompanying Allama Tabatabai in all sessions, private sessions, public sessions. Okay. So the result of such tawfiq is nothing but standing or being regarded as the late scholar representing the school of thought that might be known as the school of thought of Mullah Hussain Ghulia Hamedani.
Right.
Nowadays, people, or better to say, scholars, if they want to highlight someone as the one who is representing this school of thought, they name Ayatollah Saadat Parvar or Pahlavani. And this is not achievable except through hardship. I mean hardship in terms of training, self-training,
yes,
going through
very difficult spirituality and experiences, spiritual experiencing and exercising, better to say, spiritual exercising.
Self-purification.
Yes, and self-purification.
Okay.
So he reached the level that even he is compared with Mullah Hussain Quli Hamedani in terms of nurturing different students. Mm-hmm. That nowadays, Hauzavi students, everybody who enters in the Hauza, are benefiting from the students who were nurtured by him. Okay. I mean, Ayatollah Saadat Parvar. This is a very important character because we had a lot of ulama, a lot of scholars, but in terms of nurturing several students and bringing up students to their level, this is something which is mentioned for Mullah Hussain Quli Hamedani and then for Allama Saadat Parvar.
Sorry, is it true that Ayatollah Saadat Parvar got a specific permission from Allama Tabatabai to nurture the students? And is it at all a kind of, I mean, routine work of the, I mean, trainers, spiritual trainers, in order to give some of the students this ijaza of nurturing the students on spirituality and akhlaq?
Yes, definitely this is true. And in order to understand this and try to digest this importance, we have to talk about the same thing that we have in Fiqh Usul and Rawaya. Oh. When we say that scholar has got the permission of Rawaya, the other scholar has got the permission of Ijtihad. So when it comes to morality and Irfan in its specific term, it requires permission. This is not the easy field to be taken by everybody. Mm-hmm. Because through the way of training others, there are a lot of dangers coming through the shaitan, temptation coming through the shaitan that may affect the teacher himself. So without this permission, those great ones, those who were who had this concern for themselves, they wouldn't enter this field.
That's right.
So Allama Saadat Parvar is one of those who's got this permission to have this chance and tawfiq to nurture different students in this field.
Yes. So when we are talking about spiritual training and this spiritual wayfaring and enjoying the presence of Allama Tabatabai, what do we mean exactly? I mean, how Ayatollah Saadat Parvar enjoyed the presence of Allama?
You know, he was participating and accompanying Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayhi more than 30 years. And he himself says that I did not miss the class of Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayhi and his gathering unless only I missed 2 days. And one of them was the day that, if I'm not mistaken, his daughter got married. And the other day is that he says that there was snowy weather and I was going to participate in the class and I saw a Sayyid old man is trying to cleanse the snow from above his house or in front of his house. I witnessed him and he was trying to do this, you know, process and it was very hard for him. So at that moment, this came to my mind that my teacher, I mean, Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayhi, for sure is more satisfied with me to help to this old Sayyid rather than participating in the class.
Very good.
So he decides to not to participate in the class, but helping that old Sayyid.
That's right.
So it is very important to have, you know, determined will and not to leave the scene easily.
Yes.
So he says that I just missed 2 sessions.
Yes.
And this is very unique about him.
That's right. And so many of the works that Ayatollah Saadat Parvar compiled are somehow related to the spiritual circles that he attended with Allama Tabatabai, especially Jamal Aftab, you know, related to elaboration on the ghazals or the sonnets of Hafiz. Also, some of the rivayat and ayat that have been explicated by Allama Tabatabai. Raz-e Dil, or the secret of the heart, is another one, you know, which is an elaboration exegesis on Gulshan-e Raz, on Sheikh Mahmud Shabestari. Again, in the spiritual sessions that he attended with Allama Tabatabai. Also, Pasdaran Harim-e-Ishq, or the safeguards of the sanctuary of love. This is the rough translation, of course. Which is related somehow again to
to the guidelines, spiritual trainings, educational trainings, when at the presence of Allama Tabatabai, and so many, you know, other works which are related to spirituality. He was among the spiritual trainers who has quite fruitful compilations too, because so many of the Orafa maybe have one, two books, you know, but his books are really many. He has also a book regarding the Qayba of Imam Mahdi, isn't it? What is that book?
Ash-Shumus al-Mudiyah. Yes, this is the book. Okay. That
this is in Arabic?
Yes, this is what is the title? He has compiled all the riwayat regarding the issue or regarding the Imam Zaman alayhi salam.
Okay.
Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
The quality of the occultation or something like that?
Everything.
Okay.
In terms of his birth and the place he was born, the close companions, that's over right. The minor occultation, okay. And after that, everything which is in relation to Baqiyatullah al-Azam.
That's all right.
You know, even sometimes okay. We think that these figures always are giving odd instructions to people.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, for example, recite this dhikr 10 times, that one 100 times, that one 50 times, that one 70 times. Then you will see something, you know, brilliant into the sky and you have to follow it. Maybe we think like this regarding these moral figures. But it's very important that he says to his students that you have to be in good mood and good behavior with your family and especially with your wife.
That's all right.
He says, even though, for example, the food that she has prepared for you is not suitable with your favor, you have to be thankful toward her and thank her. And he says that once I got angry with my family, with my wife, when I was young.
That's right.
And I was told in a way that 20 years of your actions was vanished because you got angry with your wife.
That's right.
So, you know, trying to
socialize with the people around
and to implement the orders of Ahlul Bayt والسلام, regarding have good temper with family, with neighbors, with people, and loving them. These orders are very important to be a pious and moral person.
So being pious, does that mean being secluded and following a solitary life in confinement? It means being among the people, at the same time have self-account and take care of your soul. That's all right. And you know, sometimes the people have to take care about some of the fake mystical movements that are followed here and there under the name of such scholars like Ayatollah Saadat Parvar, Allama Tabatabai, or Sayyid Ali Ghazi Tabatabai, you know. For sure, this line had its own permissions and license, and there are some serious content to be taught in this way. Not everyone who can do some, we can say, illusion, or it's better to say magical action, can be called an arif or a mystic. For sure, Islamic Shiite mysticism must be in the framework of the shariat and the obligations that are recommended by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Prophet Muhammad, and the infallible imams.
May I add something?
Okay.
I think it's better to say, or on top of what you brothers said, that there are some easy tasks but difficult to be done. Mm-hmm. For example, when we look at Ayatollah Saadat Parvar, we see that he has entitled with different names: Saadat Parvar, Tehrani, Pahlavani.
Okay.
One of his students was once explaining for us why he has three different names.
Okay.
So, before we say what was the explanation behind this type of names which has nothing to do with each other, he was saying, we have to mention this point, that this field of spirituality is really subject to dangers like being famous.
Oh.
So these people were trying to escape from getting famous and popular among people. What nowadays everybody is trying to do through his profile in Instagram, Telegram, here and there.
Yes.
So fame in and of itself is dangerous for our spirituality.
Okay.
So
somebody who is stepping on this path for him, it's much better to always be represented by one name.
One way to escape fame and reputation.
So he was trying to change his name in a way that no one would understand why he's changing the name. But at different stage of his life, for example, at the beginning, he was named Pahlavani. Then Ayatollah Tehrani. And then Saadat Parvar. Trying to escape fame and getting popular among people. So these are easy tasks, but difficult to be done. For example, we want to be famous in the university under this specific name. Everybody who call our name, people who direct or point out, this is that famous teacher or professor at the university. So it's for us even difficult to practice such a thing.
So avoiding fame and reputation was among the most outstanding traits of the spiritual trainers and the teachers. Shawwal 12, 1425 was the year that this outstanding man passed away. May Allah bless his soul and may he rest in peace. Inshallah, the late Marhum Ayatollah Saadat Parvar, mainly known as Pahlavani Tehrani. Thank you much, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya, for presence in the program, The Teacher.
You are most welcome, man.
You are most welcome.
And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, Fi Awan Allah. God bless you all.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat,
emamat,
is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
اسلام تو تمام ارزش ها ارزش چی آقا اسلام
ایمان The religion of Islam emphasizes on all humanitarian values like faith, loyalty, patience, sincerity, rights of women, heritage, righteous deeds, etc., regardless of the gender of the people. In all these rights, Islam values men and women alike.
المسلمين والمسلمات والمؤمنين والمؤمنات
As we read in Ayah 35 of Surah Al-Ahzab, indeed, the Muslim men and the Muslim women, the faithful men and the faithful women, the obedient men and the obedient women, the truthful men and the truthful women, the patient men and the patient women, the humble men and the humble women, the charitable men and the charitable women, the men who fast and the women who fast, the men who guard their private parts and the women who guard, the men who remember Allah greatly and the women who remember Allah greatly. Allah holds in store for them forgiveness and a great reward. Contemplation upon the content of this ayah shows us the right path of Allah, and even non-Muslims will be fascinated by the values that are given to both men and women alike. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I'm in the studio here today. I'm Muzaffar Haider. Can we have a short introduction from both of you? Would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Mahdi, and I've been a student of Hausa for the past 7 years. Let's keep it that short.
MashaAllah, MashaAllah, 7 years. It's going to be 10 soon, inshaAllah. Brother Mahdi, welcome to the show. And yourself.
My name is Abdullah Al-Musawi, also a student of the Hausa.
Uh-huh, alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
And where are you from?
Australia.
Melbourne.
I wanted to just roll a ball out there and see where it takes us. So I wanted to talk about the idea of maturity, and particularly maturity in life. So you encounter so many people out there. And recently I've started to discover that maturity is not something that necessarily comes with age, but rather it's something that you kind of consciously have to choose to do. Otherwise, you will remain immature forever, like me. Sayyid Abdullah, what are your thoughts, initial thoughts on this?
So what is maturity? So is it the skills? Is it the knowledge that you have? Is it what is maturity?
Is it the wisdom? Is it
Islamic age? Because maturity Islamically is one thing, Quranically is another, by the way.
I was not talking about the fiqhi element of it, obviously, if you'd...
I think maturity is all about responsibility.
We have a lot of people who are like married and they got kids, but they don't mature at all.
They're not responsible.
They have responsibility to take care of a wife and kid, but they're just not mature.
No, but I mean responsibility, the absolute meaning of it, not just family, not just from the family perspective. I mean, you have a lot of responsibilities. If you act upon your duties, know your duties, and take on your responsibility, I think you can be known as a mature person.
So does it have to do with age, though?
No. Necessarily.
Okay, hold on. So I wanted to go to the Quranic perspective because I actually just happened to look up every verse of the Quran last night which has the word balagha in it, or the root word balagha in it.
Don't say that.
It was all about, you know, when he reaches maturity, and it's often talking about prophets. When he reaches maturity, or when he reached maturity, what is the life?
I have a verse that you obviously overlooked.
It's not about a prophet.
It's just about normal people. حَتَّى إِذَا بَلَغَ أَشُدُّهُ وَبَلَغَ أَرْبَعِينَ سَنَةً. Once he reaches his full maturity, and at the age of 40.
Who is this referring to?
Normal people? Yeah.
But the age of 40?
Yeah, so Allah says that the age of 40 is where you accumulate the most experience of life.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else. So you become like mature at the age of 40.
Mm-hmm. Well, the number 40 is having a lot of secrets right?
Oh, that's
so the number
40
is an important number in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I heard another saying that it was saying that get hopeless of changing yourself, reforming the bad habits that you might have grown if you pass the age of 40. So whatever you did for... So reforming yourself.
Yeah, I think the hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, "Man balagha al-arba'in wa lam yata'assa faqad asa," which people take it literally. He said, "Whoever reaches the age of 40 without having a stick, then he has committed a sin." I think I remember one of the teachers in Hausa. He said, "You need to have a stick." I said to him, "It's a metaphorical. It's not talking about a stick."
Mm-hmm.
"Man balagha al-arba'in wa lam yata'assa," meaning like he has not stopped sinning, then he's a sinner.
Uh-huh.
After Arba'in, it's not going to stop. Yeah.
Because I think Arba'in, or the 40th, or the age of 40, is that turning point.
Yeah.
So we have maturity in terms of maturity of the spirit, or the social definition of maturity.
Mm.
So people call you mature if you take on your responsibility and act upon them completely, right? If I, for example, as a student in 8th grade, how would you call them responsible? Helping parents at home, doing their homeworks on time, probably preparing to do prayers and
exactly the fiqh
learning
maturity.
Their religions.
Is what you're saying is the fiqh maturity, because fiqh maturity, bulugh al-fiqhi, is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, at certain age, whether you're a 9 for a girl or 15 for a boy, that you are required to hold certain responsibilities, like praying and fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
these are responsibilities.
Age does matter?
It does matter in terms of certain responsibilities, and it does matter in other.
That fiqhi age for maturity, or the bulugh, is that minimum thing. So some people,
you've heard some of the scholars
started to praying salatullah from the age of 4.
I'm saying that once a person becomes mature Islamically, he is given responsibilities that he must perform. Failing to perform them will obviously
have consequences.
Yeah, I mean, so am I right to say that then maturity, to a lesser or greater extent, it comes down to accepting responsibilities? Because even if you take the fiqhi definition of it, it's that responsibility of the ahkam. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, fast in the month of Ramadan, pray your five daily prayers, etc. And if you take the 40-year-old, you know, the spirit,